Audio Kitchen.
You won't believe the static.
The Audio Kitchen. The Audio Kitchen.
Yes, it's running. You can't hear it. You can't hear it go round when you're recording. Well, when you're rewinding or something, you can.
Testing. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Can you shut the door?
Tell it like it is, Professor.
Center the page, the word agreement, and say, whereas, comma, Shelby, S-H-E-L-B-Y, Doolittle, D-O-O-L-I-T-T-L-E, comma, here and after called, quotation marks, wife, close quotation marks, and Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, Doolittle, comma, here and after, call quotation marks, husband, close quotation marks, have elected to enter into a trial separation with the view of ascertaining whether or not their marriage is salvageable, semicolon, and new paragraph, whereas, comma, the parties hereto desire to set forth the terms and conditions of the respective obligations of the parties during such period of separation, comma, and to let the same govern in the event either party hereto elects to bring about a termination of their marital relationship by action for divorce, semicolon, new paragraph, in all capital letters, now, comma, therefore, comma, be it hereby agreed between the parties hereto, colon, back to normal letters. Paragraph 1 in the center of the page. I mean just the figure 1, not the word paragraph. And say, custody of the minor child of the parties, comma, Leslie, L-E-S-L-I-E, comma, aged 3 years, comma, shall vest in the wife, comma, subject to the right of the husband to visit with the said child and have the said child visit with him at all reasonable times, comma, circumstances and conditions, comma, not adverse to the general health, comma, education and welfare of the said minor child, comma, and after reasonable advance notice to the wife of such intended visitations, period. In the event the parties should at any time be unable to agree on the amount of visitation accorded to the husband, comma, it is hereby agreed that the husband shall have the right to have the said child visit with him in acceptable environmental conditions, not less often than 2 weekends per month, comma, from Saturday morning at 9 a.m., comma, until the following day, comma, Sunday, comma, at 6 p.m., comma, with the husband responsible for picking up and returning the said child to the residence of the wife or such other location as she may designate, period. It is further agreed that should the separation of the parties become permanent, comma, there will be a division of holidays, comma, summer vacation period, and other times during which the non-custodial parent shall have the right to have the said minor child with him to ensure that the child maintains a healthy and proper interest, comma, love and respect for both parents, period. Neither party shall make any comments or speak any words toward or in the presence of the said child which might have the effect of impairing the feelings of the said child for either parent, period. Next paragraph, whatever the number. The wife shall have the right to reoccupy the apartment and shall have her choice of the household furnishings, comma, appliances, comma, linens and equipment which she deems essential to the care and maintenance of herself and minor child, period. The husband shall vacate the aforesaid apartment within 3 days following the execution of this agreement by both parties to enable the wife and minor child to return and resume their residence there, period. Next paragraph, whatever the number. The husband shall pay to the wife as his contribution for the support and maintenance of the minor child of the parties the sum of $500 per month, comma, commencing and prorated from the first Saturday following the execution of this agreement by both parties, comma, and thereafter on or before the second and 16th day of each month thereafter, period. Should the marriage of these parties terminate in divorce decree, comma, it is agreed that the child support payment shall continue only until the 18th birthday of the said child, comma, or her marriage, comma, or her becoming wholly self-supporting, comma, whichever occurs first, period. Next paragraph, whatever the number. The parties further agree that should either of them elect to terminate this marriage, comma, this agreement shall constitute the basis for the terms and conditions of such divorce, comma, except as the same may be amended by mutual agreement between the parties hereto, comma, or in the absence of such agreement, comma, by adjudication by the court. The paragraph without a number and witness whereof, comma, the parties hereto have set their hands and seals this blank day of blank, comma, 1985, period. Draw a line for the wife, one for the husband, that should do it.
You know what? It's the Audio Kitchen. An hour of unprofitable and unprofessional recordings with your host and curator, the Professor. That's me. This week in the kitchen, our focus will be on the ugly business of divorce. While in theory, marriage is supposed to be, you know, forever, until death do you part. Well, it doesn't always work out that way. A lot of times, it doesn't work out that way. Haven't you been to a wedding sometimes and you just know, this isn't going to work? And practically speaking, divorce is always an accident, really. I mean, no one plans to get a divorce, not in the beginning. In general, divorce is painful. And when there's a lot of shared property, it can be really messy. And when there's kids involved, it can be a pretty traumatic experience. And do you know who had the very first divorce? The very first one. In all of history, the very first divorce. Well, I didn't know either until I found this tape. And it was a long time ago, so I don't have a recording of the first people getting divorced. This is a recreation of the very first legal divorce proceeding. Who knew?
Let's suppose that Adam was so outraged that having been evicted from the Garden of Eden, that he sued Eve for divorce. And I have an idea that the judge, after hearing the evidence, would probably pronounce his sentence somewhat along these lines. This is a petition for divorce presented by Adam of Eden. It is urged that the respondent of Eden has treated the petitioner with physical and mental cruelty of such kind as to render intolerable the continued cohabitation of the spouses. The parties assert that they are husband and wife, but neither remembers much about the facts surrounding their marriage. The respondent says it's all basically a blank to her. She believes, however, that the period of courtship for the couple was quite brief. The petitioner testified that all he could remember is that he was alone for quite a while. One day, when in a deep sleep, and when he... his ribs have felt different. It is a first marriage for both parties. There are two children of the marriage, Cain, son of Adam, and Abel, son of Adam. The relief asked in addition to a degree of divorce, is custody of the children and court costs. The parties are presently living with their children next to the Euphrates River, just outside the Garden of Eden. They resided previously in the garden in a jointly owned matrimonial home until a recent misfortune befell them. The petitioner claims that once a talking serpent came along, and the respondent spent hours gossiping with the reptile and neglecting her household chores. Matters deteriorated more when the respondent started inviting the serpent frequently into the matrimonial home. For many weeks, the serpent suggested to the respondent that she eat the fruit of the tree of knowledge. She told the serpent that the fruit was taboo. But in due course, she succumbed to the serpent's entreaty and ventured to taste the fruit. When she saw that she neither died nor became sick, she strongly urged the petitioner to try it. He adamantly refused. His wife then told him that she would stop cooking for him altogether and that she would withhold all other matrimonial immunities unless he would try a piece of her forbidden fruit pie. The petitioner considered his dilemma and he took a bite of the fruit. The results were immediately disastrous. A great sense of embarrassment suddenly became over him, causing him to hide in the bushes for several days. To make matters worse, he and his family were evicted from the Garden of Eden on short notice. As the petitioner puts it, he barely had time to get his fig leaf on. He also attributes that gourmet venture a subsequent adverse subsequent. He also attributes that gourmet venture a subsequent adverse change. No, he also attributes to that gourmet venture a subsequent adverse change of luck in his farming, swearing that the farm just wasn't what it used to be. The question to be decided now is, has the respondent by her conduct treated the petitioner with such cruelty as to render continued cohabitation intolerable? The respondent takes a position that the petitioner is oversensitive. She says that she was not aware of the consequences of eating of the tree of knowledge and blames the entire episode on the serpent. In other words, the serpent beguiled me and I did eat. While it is true that the serpent was most influential in getting the respondent to eat the fruit, it is hard to believe that her ignorance of the consequences of eating of the tree of knowledge is as she pretends it to be. Can the respondent plead as a defense to allegations of cruelty that petitioner is oversensitive? I doubt it. The respondent further adds that the conduct complained of has caused the petitioner neither injury nor reasonable apprehension thereof. The argument is certainly not supported by the evidence. To this day, the petitioner has a terrifying phobia of fruits. Before he bites into an apple, he has one of the animals taste it while he closes his eyes and holds his ears. Lord, indeed, recognizes the difference between knowing... No, that's not it. I am of the opinion, therefore, that public interest would best be served if a decree of divorce is granted. And it is so ordered.
I don't recall a marriage between Adam and Eve in Genesis. Did I just miss that? But you know how Christians are. I mean, the first couple on earth living in sin? That's just a little too much to handle. Here's some lighter material, a little more recent, in fact. This came to me by way of P. Hicks out in San Diego. And, you know, after a few years pass, you can usually laugh about a divorce, have a good chuckle or two. Traumatic as a divorce is, usually if you've made some good choices, you can realize you're better off without that marriage. And that's what Jackie here has figured out. Jackie and Lisa were two women who met in Hollywood, who were aspiring actresses at one time. And they both got involved in some marriages that didn't go well. But their friendship continued, and this particular recording finds them sitting at the kitchen table, fortified by vodka and grapefruit juice. You can hear it tinkling in the glass. Anyway, these two girls are just having a good time. And here we'll hear Jackie telling us about Gary, her ex-husband. A philandering, traveling salesman. And it's quite a humorous story with a few plot twists. And my favorite part is how her acting skills come into play when she catches him in the act.
Set the scene, November 1974, cold whiskey winter, kind of like today. Anyway, ever since I was little, I wanted to be an actress, so of course that's why this little Ohio girl decided to go to the big city, L.A. And I was 21 years old at the time, and skipping around here and there trying to learn the city, and then finally by the time I was 25, I started my acting career, which I stuck to for 2 years, and went to school and practiced hard and got my pictures and did a few little bit parts and commercials and was just squeaking along, just getting there, meeting people and getting started with it. And then I started to feel the stress of what it's like when you don't get jobs and things are getting rough and you're living from mouth to hand and trying to hubbub with all the LA life. Anyway, so that was about the time I met Gary, and we used to
Your
hang-
ex-husband.
Yes, my ex-husband. And he was about 23. I'd been into my acting career about 2 years, so I'm about 26. And the minute I laid eyes on him, he just did something to me from the very beginning. And this bar was a Santa Monica bar called the Ore House, and we used to go there on Mondays for Oldies but Goodies night after softball games, and we had a girls softball team who sponsored us. So it was always a wild, crazy, dancing on the table type night. And so when I met him, I know he just took me like a bar chick or whatever, but we had a mutual friend, and his mutual friend talked him into getting to know me a little bit better, which I was thrilled. But it was kind of like just a fun, fast-paced, have a good time type relationship, and we were dating about 2 weeks, and lo and behold, I got pregnant, and I barely knew the man, he barely knew me, but for some reason I was head over heels in love with him, and he just freaked out and couldn't handle it. And so my sister moved in with me. She had moved out to Los Angeles also, so she helped me. And I had a roommate, my old-time best friend from high school. So the three of us struggled with my pregnancy. I had to give up my acting, and I went back to work where I had worked full-time as a secretary. And I made it through the thing, just saw him here and there just a little bit, and then he showed up in the delivery room and fell in love with his son. And that was more or less the beginning of our...
Of the end.
The beginning of the end. Of a very hard 7 years. We stayed together for 7 years, and very rocky. We had another girl in 1985, so, you know, a good 3.5 years went by before I got pregnant again, so we thought we were getting somewhere. But little did I know, he was playing around on the side. And
he's a salesman too.
He was going to trade shows, and they were getting hookers, and he was lying through his teeth because he never was able to really cope and deal with the responsibilities of family and marriage. So, but he would lie to me and tell me that he was honest and decent and that I was losing my mind imagining all this crazy stuff. And then one day, the phone rang and he was on a business trip and I picked it up and I recognized his voice.
You're going to die.
He asked for Cheryl. And right away, something just clicked. I think that's my husband asking for Cheryl. So quickly, I disguised my voice. I used my acting talents at this moment. And I disguised my voice, and I said, hold on just a minute. And I went and was gone. I came back, and I said, hello? And he said, Cheryl?
Yeah?
Well, I'm down here at Disneyland Hotel on a trade show, and I wanted to see if you could come and meet me. Well, now my heart's beating, ripping out of my chest. I'm so scared, but I thought I had to really, really catch him. Otherwise, he'd lie to me again, and I'd feel like a fool. So I just continued on with my voice and asked him, are we going to be together tonight in your hotel room? Things like that.
Can you believe
to get
he
him
fell
to actually
for it?
Admit it.
Joe, he actually fell for it, I swear.
Yeah, he did. And then I said, are we going to make love? He said, well, whatever happens, baby, or whatever. It was disgusting. But I lost at that point. I started yelling on the phone, and he had a heart attack. So he came rushing home that next night or something, and I was sitting there devastated on my mind, and he swore it was the worst mistake he ever made. It'll never happen again. He loves his wife. He loves his family. Please forgive. Please forgive. And about 3 months after that, I said, well, let's go to this thing called Marriage Encounter. It brings couples back together and shows how much they love each other. So we did, and it was a very loving, intense, incredibly intense, loving, close weekend. And about a month after that, then I got pregnant with my second daughter, or my daughter, my second child.
Don't give us money we have.
Yeah, really. Really. And it wasn't a month after that Gary started messing around on the road again, but I didn't know it at the time. We were busy having babies, and he was being frustrated and upset. And by the end of my pregnancy, I couldn't hardly stand being in the same room with him. I couldn't even look at him. I just hate. I'd go to my doctor and I'd say, I hate the man. Help me. I don't know what to do. Oh, the phone's ringing.
Hi, Jerry, we're back.
Oh, boy, this is pretty typical of a night. She's running around trying to make sure the girls get in bed, and the phone rings, and it's Justin's teacher from school giving me a conference while we're sitting here having vodka and greyhounds and telling our Hollywood story.
Oh, God.
If only the teacher knew. Although, I think we're the talk of the school because she called and said, we'd like to know what your situation's like. Who is that girl? Who are her children and what is she like?
Of course she lied.
I wasn't about to tell her we were LA divorcees gone Hartville.
I love it.
But anyway, back to the story.
Where were you?
I don't know. I caught him. Oh yeah, we had the baby. We were having problems.
Right, baby. Right, that's it. You had the baby.
And I finally said, forget you. I'm just going to have an affair with somebody else or whatever, I said at the time. And I had thought about having an affair with my boss, who Lisa ended up getting to know pretty well. Another saga, another chapter. But I just couldn't bring myself to it. I was really trying hard to make my marriage work. And you'll learn that Lisa and I were both very domesticated in that way. We really struggled for our families and our marriage, and we strolled our kids to the park every day and went to daycare, mommy and me classes and everything else. We really tried. We took them to McDonald's and Denny's and let them terrorize while we sat there like moms saying, shouldn't we get part-time jobs? But anyway.
Typical.
Yeah. So I went to the doctor and...
Oh, that's where you left off the VD.
Mm-hmm.
She skipped this. Didn't she skip
Mm-mm.
this? Oh, okay.
Mm-mm. I was saying I was pregnant and I had the baby and we were having... It was a very rocky marriage. Jenna now is maybe about 4 months and I was thinking of the affair and then I just couldn't bring myself to it. And then I went to the doctor because I was so run down and stressed out and I didn't know what was wrong with me and I wanted him to see if I had a physical problem. and I was paying my doctor bill, and there was this unusual bill on there, and I asked them about it, and they said that was for Gary, and I said, what does that stand for? And they said gonorrhea and syphilis tests in VD. So I very calmly had to retain my dignity as much as I could and make up some flimsy excuse like, oh yeah, he just went to Europe. Oh geez. And I walked out and I got in the car and I was on the way to daycare to pick up kids and I just screamed all the way down the freeway. And I've never been sane since. My life totally changed from that moment on.
It's true, it's true.
I immediately lost about 20 pounds and don't remember much from that point on. It was a long, hard 2 years after that. So I started my life in Ohio with a suitcase full of summer clothes, and it was really quite an adjustment. I had to live with Mom, and that was a disaster, being back with old Mom and Dad again, trying to be single again, and my mom screaming, chasing me out the door, divorcees, don't go on dates, that's no. Oh, God, it's unreal.
I love it. Okay, Jay, I'm just going to tell you a little bit. Because Jackie's rambling on.
Ramble!
Great stuff. Very animated conversation. Single moms on the loose. We'll hear Jackie's humorous tale of woe in a little while. You're listening to The Audio Kitchen, and I'm the professor. Found in amateur recordings. That's what this show is all about. And today we're looking at the multifaceted world of divorce. Now let's swing down a couple rungs of the social ladder and listen to a conversation between two simple Southerners, both involved in divorce proceedings. And by the way, this is another gem from the collection of Georgia Todd. And one of the things that made this show possible, doing this audio kitchen on divorce, is that when people are going through a divorce, there's often a desire, a need even, to gather evidence against your spouse. So you have a better chance of getting the best deal in court, of slamming the person up against the wall with your evidence. And typically this translates to phone recordings, trying to get the dirt down on tape. And I'm pretty sure that's what this is. This entire tape consists of the phone conversations of a woman named Fran. Besides working at Kmart and scoring pot for her friends, Fran is also in the middle of divorce. And I believe her soon-to-be ex-husband created this tape. And it is just jam-packed, full of rich, incriminating fun. The conversation we're about to hear is between Fran and a newly divorced friend. I don't know the guy's name, but he's definitely looking to get her in the sack. He says he has to have a good-looking girlfriend, and she's the only good-looking one he knows. But what's really sad here is that his ex-wife has gotten a peace warrant out on this guy. And peace warrant is a Georgia term for a restraining order. You know, you legally restrict somebody from getting anywhere near you. That's what she's done. Why? Well, he went to her house drunk out of his mind, and he's not sure exactly of what all happened, but, you know, she says he beat her up and tried to rape her, but he just doesn't remember, and, you know, he's not really sure if that happened. And what's amazing to me is that Fran seems really interested in bonking the guy, even though he may have tried to rape, and he may have really beat up his ex-wife. But despite their mutual desire, it's just not going to be that easy. His license was taken away. And her old man might come around. And, you know, he might be a little bit harder to beat up.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, can you busy? Talk.
Where the hell are you?
Where in the hell have you been?
I thought you was going to call me out there at work.
Friday.
I
did.
No, you didn't.
Ma'am, I called every goddamn place. I haven't called another place that knew about you. They said you weren't there. I called another Kmart on Austell Road. They said you weren't there. They said that you didn't come to work. Swear to God, I called everybody looking for you. Called everywhere. Even called your house all weekend long and didn't talk to nobody but James.
So, well, I'm here.
Well, honest to God, that's all I've done all weekend long. All I talked to was him. You know, I called, I know, 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, I'll beat you with my divorce.
How?
The 11th. Final.
Is it?
Yes, ma'am.
You're kidding.
Final as could be.
Damn.
I love it. I had a bunch of shit thrown on me, though.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I had a peace warrant thrown at me. I can't go around it no more.
Hmm.
But no big deal. Good for the ganders, good for the goose.
What do you do about privileges with the kids?
Oh, she said I can get the kids, but I got to meet her in a public place, you know? And, like, get them at, you know, I don't know, the mall or something. But I don't even want to do that. I'm going to change this for mama. I want her to take the kids to my mama's and pick her up. I don't even want to see her, friend. I don't want to see her on the road. I don't want to see her never again in my life. I don't. It's the only way I'm going to get her out of my head, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Keep worrying about what she's doing, who she's screwing, what she's, who she's fooling around with. I don't want to do that. I don't even want to see the bitch. I don't even want her around me. I don't want to hear about her. I'm not going to Jonesboro no more. If I go to Jonesboro, there'll be one reason. That'd be to see you. I'm not going to see Gene. I mean, nothing against me. Now, I might end up seeing Gene. I don't want to see nobody because I found out a bunch of my friends went down against me. They threw down against me when they went to get that property bond, you know, I mean, that peace warrant taken out on me.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Young, who I thought was one of my best friends in the world, he went with her to the sheriff's department and had it done. She told him a bunch of shit. Well, some of it was my fault. I mean, I did. I went over there drunk and done a bunch of silly shit I should have never have did. And I quit drinking, friend. You know Kodiak?
Mm-hmm.
I've been quitting 9 days. And he touched it.
Mm-hmm.
And as for drinking, I hadn't drank. It's been since last Sunday. I didn't drink a beer. Didn't drink no beer on the road today. I didn't drink none of the gang. Had none of the thing. Ain't smoked no pot. Straight been doing push-ups and running every day. Getting my act together. I'm going to make it perfect. But been wanting to see you. Hell, I ain't got nobody. I just started me a part-time job. Mm-hmm. I told you about it.
Uh-huh. Where's that? Where at?
Awesome. Got 5:30. You know what it's fixing to make me? $17 an hour.
What?
Construction, putting up it's like a cement final like you put on Spanish looking homes.
Uh-huh.
And he started me at $8 an hour and he said it won't be no time at all. I'll be making $17 an hour.
Uh-huh.
Ain't that killer?
Yeah. It's cool.
Well, when I get to see you? Name it. Next month?
No.
Well, when? I got to have me a good looking girlfriend, friend. You're the only one I know good looking.
Hmm. Well, that sounds good anyway. Well, why don't you come down here?
Oh, friend, if I got caught driving in your house, I'd be dead.
Why?
I ain't got no driver's license.
Oh.
They'll kill me. Plus, what if I come over and your old man comes over?
Well, he ain't gonna come out here because he's done left. He come by here evidently and left me a note.
That don't mean he ain't come
back. I just seen it.
Huh?
I just seen the note right there.
I come by your house. What kind of car does he drive?
He drives my pickup truck.
Whose little yellow car is that?
That's his too. Yeah, it is.
Well, I told you how the other one, he was there.
He,
early.
Uses that the haul, and he come by here and haul some stuff off from here.
I come by your house at 5:45.
When?
Last Saturday morning.
I wasn't here.
Where were you?
I was at my sister's. I spent the weekend with her, helping her with her work.
I said, well, I come to your house, but you don't have a... She took a peace warrant out on me.
Uh-huh.
And that's another thing that makes her feel real bad. Well, she told her... Did I tell you what she said? She said...
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. She called my mama the next day, all in hysterics, crying. I went down there drunk, friend. Went in. And this is why I'm so, so embarrassed and ashamed of what I did. And I'm not sure what all I did, you know. I was drunk as a dog. Dropped the kids off. She says I beat her up. I ain't never beat up a woman in my entire life. Now, I ain't saying I didn't slap her, because I remember getting, you know, grabbing her. She says I tried to rape her. She says I even threatened her with my roommate. I got this roommate. said that I even threatened her with him, and he could come in and get him a little bit. And all this I can't believe, friend. I can't believe. If I did say it, then I don't need to drink no more in my life. You know, I mean, I'm on the verge, I don't know what really happened. But she went and swore a peace warrant for me, and she was, used to be a dispatcher for Clayton County.
Uh-huh.
And so she knows, and her brother-in-law is works for the DA. And she knows all them cops. And since we've been separated, she's locked the car, the key in the car. One, she called a friend of hers who is a cop. Come get in. All they need to do is see me, friend. All they need to do is see my Jeep, and they'll pull me over and catch me. They're going to put me in jail, and they're going to believe everything she says. They're going to beat the shit out of me. I mean, I won't have a chance, you know. Or I'd come down there. I'd be afraid to death.
Well, why would you even attempt to do something like that with her?
I don't know, friend. It had to be alcohol. I mean, honestly.
No. You need to get her out of your damn system.
I know, friend. That's why I'm not going to. I don't want to see her no more, friend. I don't want to see her even to pick up my children. I want her to take my children to my mama's house, and I'll pick them up from there. And then I'll take them back Sunday, and then when she comes to pick them up from my mama's, I just leave the child support money there, you know. So, told my mother I ain't been giving her no money. She told my mama. She called my mama crying. Mama asked what happened. Mama didn't want me to go to psychiatrist. They think I'm crazy. So, tell you the truth, I've been telling them to go to psychiatrist and to AAA every night. Well, friend, ain't nothing wrong with me. It's, I have talked to one person about it. It's one thing was all the good I was doing, you know, giving her everything. I gave her everything out of the house. Then she went to friends, got all this girl's furniture and everything. So she just f***ed me. I give her, well, I got the money from the railroad. She spent the hell out of it. Then she left. Then I got my income tax and I gave her half of it. She shouldn't have got half of it. Then as soon as she got it, she left and fucked me over. And it was a bunch of, doctor I talked to for a little while, said it was a bunch of ungodly madness at me because I've been so nice and so good to her, you know. And every time I do, she just f***s me over and laughs in my face and spits on me. And then she says something about, you know, you better not be doing nothing, this and that and other. And then come to find out she's on the pill and tells me to f*** off. She'll see who she wants and does. She wants none of my business no more. And what he said was all that. The frustrations and the financial problems I got, you know, they're about to come get my house if I don't get $1,000 and all this shit. And then drinking and getting drunk, you know. He said that, he said all that just added up, you know. And it's just too much. He said it's just too much, really, for one person to take. And like I said, I love her to death, you know. I wouldn't want nothing ever happened to her. And I can't believe that. I asked Mama, I said, Mama, did you see any marks on her body? Like somebody had beat her up? She said, no, I didn't. But, you know, that's not saying I didn't slap her or nothing, you know, I don't know. I know I slapped her, but I don't know. I know one thing, I don't ever see her again in my life. Ever, 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 ever. Because she's got all, anywhere in Clayton County, I bet any cop in there catching me driving, they're going to f*** me up. Then all my friends down there know about it. You know, she called my mama, my daddy don't want to talk to me. I mean, she told him, oh God, oh God. And she even waited now, friend. It's supposed to happen Monday night. She waited until Thursday. And my friend, I didn't find out about none of this shit. I mean, I didn't know nothing she done. But I went, was with Gene Sunday, one of my friends was at his house. He said, man, you ain't no trouble, are you? I said, no, not that I know of. He said, man, I saw Nora.
Then
he
has the emergency, you want to release your line?
Yeah, I'll call you back in a while.
Where are you going?
I'm going to get something to eat.
What?
Down the road. Where are you? You got somewhere to go?
Huh?
You got somewhere to go?
No, I just want to know where he's going.
Well, I'm going to run down the road and I'll call you back in 10 minutes.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Blaming all of my ruins, I showed up in booze and ruined your black tie affair. The last one to know, the last one to show, I was the last one you thought you'd see there. And I saw the surprise and the fear in his eyes when I took his glass of champagne. I toasted you, said, honey, we may be through. You'll never hear me complain. Cause I got friends in places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases my blues away. And I'll be okay. Yeah, I'm not. guess I was wrong. I just don't belong. But then I've been there before. Everything's off. I'll just say goodnight and I'll show myself to the door. Well, I didn't mean to cause a big scene. Just give me an hour and then I'll be as high as that ivory tower that you're living in. Cause I got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the fear chases my blues away. And I'll be okay. Yeah, I'm not big.
So did you hear that guy? Well, I know I slapped her. Mama, did you see any marks on her body? You are listening to The Audio Kitchen. Real life, real people, real problems. By the way, if you have some sordid bit of audio, send it my way. Ship it on over. The mailing address for The Audio Kitchen is The Audio Kitchen. That's the first line. Care of WFMU, P.O. Box 2011, Jersey City, New Jersey, zip code 07303. Comments, questions, good cheer, direct them to my email address, prof@wfmu.org. Okay, back to the excitement and passion of divorce. Here's another bit of audio evidence that was probably collected for legal purposes. I found this in a Brooklyn junk store, and you can hear the Brooklynese being spoken here. Only I believe this time the woman, Ellen, who's in this conversation, is doing the recording, not a third party. This is Ellen and Jeff in this conversation. And they are separated, it sounds like, headed for divorce. And like the last conversation, this is sad too, but in kind of a more profound way. This woman here, Ellen, is pregnant with Jeff's child. And he wants nothing to do with this pregnancy or this child. And probably with this marriage. What's worse is he's like holding out a carrot, saying to her, if you get rid of this kid, if you give it up, maybe we can work things out. Yeah, right. And she's got a difficult situation here. You can tell. There's like kids in the background, maybe from a previous marriage. And I got to tell you, the indifference of this guy, Jeff, astounding, mind-blowing.
Jeffrey, it is, you know, you just, the one that, this was like the one thing that I just could did not, there's, I don't know how many people who don't believe in abortion, who don't want to do it. What?
One thing I can't do.
Oh, come on, but we talked about having children. You knew that we got married. You knew that we...
I told you I cannot have children with two people that don't function well together. That's what happens with my parents, and I can't repeat that.
You ever love me? You can't ask me right now when I told you that the doctor... I can't. I cannot.
Why? I'm not going to send you any checks without getting
divorced. What?
Sure is.
I waited 10 years for him.
You may wait longer.
What?
You wait a long time for a lot of things.
I love the baby, Jeff.
So what?
What?
So what?
What do you mean, so what?
Tough life.
You don't have what you want, so you're going. So... You don't want, you want to just give the baby up for adoption. But
I want us to take responsibilities for our problems and deal with them, and get rid of this kid and give him to somebody who can take care of him. You can try.
Jeff.
You know, you want to ruin your life.
I'm not going to be ruining my life. I'll be ruining my life worse the other way.
Well, whatever.
I believe so. I mean, I believe that I would, and I believe that I wouldn't be sure about the life that this kid's gonna have. And I believe every time I'm gonna see a little boy, I'm gonna wonder if that was mine.
Well, listen, I've got more to do in life than worry about those kinds of things.
Fine.
I have a son. If we don't have this, if you don't keep it, then I don't have it. You see, to me, I can make those decisions.
But you're a man and I'm a woman, and you were totally removed from the beginning, and you're a hardened individual.
I'm not so hard.
You are.
I just need to make the important decision.
You're a very hard individual, Jeff. No, people, that's not, people don't say that, because, I mean, I've met a lot of different people who will never see me again, or if they see me again, I don't know them in this sense, so it doesn't matter. And they find it very hard to accept.
Except what?
They don't understand how a father could to that quickly just, you know, decide he doesn't want the baby and just, you know, and that's it. You think nothing of it.
It's not a terrible thing to give a baby up. There's nothing embarrassing about it.
It's not that it's embarrassing.
Nothing wrong.
It's not that it's embarrassing. It's that I don't want to. I'm not embarrassed. I'm not embarrassed to do that. I want it. You know what I'm saying is. What I'm saying is that baby's been with me. You know. I mean, I've been.
Where the baby?
What?
Could have been in an oven for all.
You know, Jeffrey. You're so. How could you be so? I can't believe this is you. This is not you. This is not you.
You don't need to listen. You're a free individual.
And then what's going to happen? Then you tell me you're going to come back? I can't believe that. And even
then we'll be able to work on our problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, if our problems are so terrible that we have to give our own child up to work them out, it doesn't seem that we're going to be able to work them out. If we have to do something so drastic.
Not so drastic. When I wanted to have a child with you, I would have one. But this is not true.
Uh-huh.
Okay, show's winding up. Let's end the show with Jackie and Lisa, those fun-loving, cocktail-sipping moms. This is Lisa's divorce story. And if you recall, Jackie had the cheating salesman guy, ex-husband. Well, Lisa's ex, Kevin... He also had a wandering eye, but not for the girls. But what's really the same for both of them is that once they fell out of love with their husbands, they just went wild.
I know you know pretty much about my marriage. I was 18, Kevin was 19, we were really young. Everybody said, don't get married, you're too young. You say, oh, the hell with it. Anyways, we got married. We were married for 4 years, had a little boy. And that's where I met Jackie. We were neighbors when our little boys were one. And we were both married.
Living in Woodland Hills, taking our kids to the park. We had nice condos.
Yeah.
Everybody was working. We were so normal. Domesticated. Yeah, normal.
So anyways, what happened? We lived in Woodland Hills for a while, and then Kevin and I moved out to Calabasas to a really nice condominium out there.
We had bought our house out in Moore Park and moved out to the country.
And,
sorry for that little interruption there.
Anyways, when I was living in Calabasas and I was about 6 months pregnant, night before the Super Bowl, Kevin came to me. There was that movie, Making Love, I don't know if you know about it, where the guy's married and they have a really happy marriage, and then that he decides he's gay. Anyways, he wanted me to watch this movie, and I said, no way, this is disgusting. Anyways, he says, oh, just stay up and watch this. I said, all right, what the hell. So I watched the movie with them, and I went to bed, and I said, this is the pitch, you know, this is disgusting. They were kissing and everything. So he comes out to the bedroom and starts freaking out and crying and telling me how he's gay and this and that and how he never ever had a fling or anything, but he's just always something he's had in the back of his mind. In the meantime, Kevin was so jealous of me. I couldn't do anything. This is weird too. I can wear anything unless you approved of it. You know, it's just typical. I can never dress like I dress now, or he'd freak out.
And we used to go on these double dates together. That's how we knew each other, as like couple friends. And the whole night was filled with just cut downs and slams. And then Gary and I would get edgy, and we'd put each other down. And before the night was over, we'd be bickering, and we'd say to ourselves, why did we do this?
Exactly.
And we do it again.
Exactly.
Turn around and do it again.
Hold on, Jerry. Okay, we're back. Kid break. Okay. So where was I? We're living in Calabasas. Oh, Kevin told me he was gay and he hasn't had any flings and this and that. So, like, I was pregnant, and the next day he went to the Super Bowl party alone. Here we are, living out in Calabasas in this three-story huge condo, but we're out in the country. We had one car, so he took the car, came home. Next morning I went to work. I sat home in that big house all day, Super Bowl Sunday, freaking out. Nobody's home. Of course, everybody's at a party, and I couldn't tell anybody. Mm-hmm. So then the next day I went to work, and he had stayed home sick because he got so loaded at the Super Bowl party. And I saw a magazine in the car. It was a gay man's magazine with all these men in it. You know, the typical kind of thing. It was really, really not fun. But anyways, so then we decided, well, we'll stay together until the baby's born, because she was due in May. And one time he had me come down, and I was like 9 months pregnant, come down to a gay bar and pick him up at 3 a.m. because his ride was left him. And so I did it, of course, like the idiot that I am. But anyway, so then, I had the baby, and he moved me to a new place, that place in the city where I live. And he wouldn't move out because he didn't have the money to move out. So he stayed there, but we were like separated. And then one day he came home with his boyfriend, or I don't know, I came home or something, and I went upstairs and I heard them upstairs, and I knew they were at the house. And so I walked into my son's room. I stood outside the door, and I thought, well, the only way I'm going to get him to move out is if I really catch him in the act, because he will have nothing to say. So I stood there for a few minutes, shaking like a leaf, and then I opened the door, and I looked in there, and I said, get the hell out of here. And that's how I got out of there.
He moved right after that?
Yeah, he moved right after that.
Oh,
he had nothing to say. I mean, what could he say?
Why, was he denying it all along?
No, or but just, like, he'd never do anything in front of the family.
Yeah.
I mean, give me a break.
Oh, God.
So, Anyways, I guess I'll just stop there because that's like to where I started to be single. Yeah, and while he was living at the house, he was like, we would still, I mean, I would go out all the time. I'd leave him there to babysit all the time. And that's when I started getting really wild, going out.
Hi, Jay. I'm just overtaping a little thing that we didn't mean to be in there.
That soon?
Yeah, that soon. There?
I didn't realize
that.
Yeah. You just had the baby, and but I do remember you got real thin.
Yeah.
And you just wanted to start doing a lot of things. But Lisa and I kind of didn't get to see each other much during that time because I was having such a hard time in my marriage, and you were kind of going through your transition. We'd talk, we'd meet at the beach as much as we could, but that was a long time, you know, where we wouldn't see each other that much.
Yeah, and then we decided one time we went to the cantina, this outdoor bar, this little one in Calabasas, and we met and we decided that we were going to move in together down in Newport Beach. We thought, wouldn't that be so fun with four kids? And we'll move in together and it'll be really fun. And we
had
to Newport
a big
Beach.
Discussion about it one night, though.
We really did. We really were seriously bad. And she says, all right, I'm going home to Ohio for the summer. I'm going there. I'm just going to make some money. And then I'll be back. We'll move to Newport in September. I said, great, no problem, blah, blah, blah. So she calls me, and I said, Jackie, if you go back there, I'll kick your ass. What does she need? She calls me 2 months later and goes, I'm staying.
Oh,
I wanted
God,
to die.
That's awful.
But anyways, we're going to stop, so we're going to check this out.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, Jerry, we're back. We're just listening to the first part, and we decided that I sound like a valley girl, and Jackie sounds like a hillbilly. But you know, I really don't sound like that.
I really do sound like that. That's what's so depressing.
Depressing.
Wow.
Anyway. Anyways, what we're going to do, and I don't even know if this has any bearing on the story or whatever. We don't even know what the story is.
We're just dishing out info.
But anyways, I'm just going to tell you what Kevin was like when we were married. He's like, he's 5'10", he's got dark hair, he's really good looking. I mean, girls always thought he was really good looking, and everyone thought he was like the nicest guy, but he was an alcoholic. He drank, but he didn't drink every day, but when he drank, he'd drink so much, he'd have to get so loaded, and then he'd get really violent, and like hit me, and you know, stuff like that. But anyways, other than that, he was a really nice guy, he's a good dad, you know, he likes to be doing things all the time. He's really active. Not real athletic, though.
Mm-mm.
But doesn't like to stay home and just hang out or anything. He's real open.
He has a typical kind of an L.A. look, the black hair with the blue eyes and the dark mustache.
Kind of like a modelish look, but not that good.
Yeah, like an attractive, like he's thin. He's got kind of a small build, but it's all overall attractive.
Yeah, and now he's Mr. L.A. I mean, Mr. L.A. He's
diamond
got the earring in his ear, the diamond earring for gay or whatever that
stands for. His hair's totally
for.
Styled perfect, and his clothes have to be just right. And
right,
and
he's an engineer.
Yeah, and he talks about the parties he caters, the Hollywood parties he caters, and, you know, he's really into that scene.
He's really into the gay scene.
And we leave you with this thought.
Well, guess what? That's the end of the show. You and I will now be separated. We shall be put asunder. What does that mean, put asunder? Nobody told me. Actually, for real, I'll be back here next week. Same time, same place, right here. It'll be fun. Thank you for listening. Thanks for being around. And I'll see you then. Adios. Bye.
Goodbye.